Okay.
Yep.
My name is Brendan Malone. I'm the vice chairman of the Capital Region Council of Governments Regional Planning Commission. I represent Town of Suffield Planning and Zoning Commission.
Hi, I'm Gary Bazzano. I represent the City of Hartford on the Planning and Zoning Commission.
Yeah, WSC Town of Newington, Planning and Zoning Commission.
My name is Jay Stoppelman. I represent Manchester on Planning and Zoning Regional.
I'm Bill Rice, Simsbury Planning Commission.
I'm Ed Merritt, Coventry Planning and Zoning Commission.
Bruce Mayer, Tallinn Planning and Zoning Commission.
Tom Armstrong, Planning and Zoning Commission, Avon.
I'm Meg Harvey. I'm on Planning and Zoning Commission for Windsor. I'm new. I was previously an alternate for Ken Smith, but he has left Windsor's Planning and Zoning, so I am now the designee for Windsor.
Well, welcome, Meg. It's great to meet you.
Thanks.
Lance Perry, Canton Planning and Zoning.
Okay, if that's everybody, we're going to...
Did we get Mark?
Hi,
Mark, are you? Okay.
Mark France, Newington, Connecticut.
Thanks, Mark. I'm Laura, Administrative Assistant at CROG, in case anybody doesn't know.
And I'm Chris Henshi, the Transportation Planner at CROG. I just wanted to let everyone know as the former organizer for RPC on our end, when Pike Santo retired as of the beginning of September. So I am Chris Henshi, your new boss in charge of organizing RPC and just kind of the speaker, organizing the speakers and everything behind that. So if you have any questions, comments, feedback, suggestions, I'm your guy now. So just wanted to let you all know of that, and we'll move on to adopting those minutes.
Thank you very much, Chris. We really appreciate you. And on a personal note, I've been working with Lynn since I got on the Regional Planning Commission, and she was a great person, very organized. Always had an ear to lend for anybody who ever emailed her or called her. You got pretty big shoes to fill, Chris, but we know you can do the job. So thank you very much.
I gotcha.
We're going to move along to the adoption of the minutes from the June 17th, 2021 meeting. I'll be abstaining from this vote. I was not in attendance. So I will call for a motion to approve the minutes from the June 17th.
Sally Sobieski from Newington make a motion to approve the minutes from 17 June.
Thank you, Stanley. Is there a second?
Bill Rice, Simsbury, seconds the motion.
Thank you very much. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
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 Is there anybody opposed? Any abstentions? The ayes have it. All right. Moving along the agenda, we're going to have a presentation by Caitlin Palmer and Chris on the affordable housing and regional housing assessment.
Yes, I will hand this over to Caitlin, who will give the first part of the presentation about some of the history and background of the subject, and then I will take over on the analysis portion. So, Caitlin, the floor is yours.
All right. Thank you. So, like the title suggests, this is kind of all coming out of the 830J legislation requirement to create affordable housing plans in all of our Connecticut towns across the state. Some of this, I assume probably a lot of this is going to be familiar content for you guys. My first section that I'm going to talk about, like Chris said, is sort of the background before I hand it over to the analysis piece. But I did think it was prudent to talk about a few things leading up to, you know, the creation of your plans. I'm not sure. I actually was wondering how many of you all have created your plans, and you could feel free to put that in the chat if you guys have adopted it or if you know that your town's working on it. We definitely have seen some towns submit to us, usually by way of the POCD is the most common way that we've known about it for a few towns. And it's not due until July of next year, but and I'll touch on that a little bit as well. So would love to hear any feedback from folks, like I said. And basically first, if Chris, you want to go ahead and switch slides. Stepping back, taking a high level view just in general at affordability in Connecticut, and not just housing affordability, but affordability in general. I think it's interesting to note that Connecticut cities have some of the highest concentrations of extreme poverty and wealth in the nation. I think that that's an important perspective to keep in mind as we start having conversations in our communities about affordable housing, as far as the types of housing that we want to provide, the people that we need to provide for, where we're going to place affordable housing or think about placing affordable housing. So that's an important point to make. Next, probably of no news to anybody, but Connecticut is one of the most expensive states to live in. I've heard that before many times. I kind of was, before when making this presentation, wanted to quantify it a little bit and, you know, what does that mean? Based on what I was able to find, we're pretty consistently rated one of the top 10 most expensive states to live in. Additionally, I was able to find a cost of living index that put it into some perspective as well, looking at a variety of factors as far as housing costs, transportation costs, food, utilities, and healthcare, a bunch of other factors that estimates that Connecticut is about 19% more expensive to live in than the national average. So again, that's interesting perspective just to keep in mind as we start planning for quality of life, where we're providing housing and housing types. And then last but not least here, we have cost of living has increased over time, but wages have stagnated. There's a variety of, I think, metrics that you can take into consideration of your community to benchmark this. Of note, in the report, it talks about 25% of homeowners in Connecticut, in Crog region, actually is considered housing cost burdened. Your housing cost burdened when you're more than 30% of your income goes towards your housing costs. So again, 25% of Crog resident homeowners. Unsurprisingly, that's higher for renters. I think in the Hartford County, the report talks about, I think it's between 25 and 30% for renters in the Hartford County, but Talon County is actually closer to 50% actually for housing cost burden. There's other metrics as far as hourly living wage, my notes a little fuzzy there. And there's actually MIT put some presentations or some website out there for livingwage.mit.edu. And it's interesting. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on that, but basically it just says, you know, if you are a single adult or if you have one working adults in the family, or if you have both working adults, and then for a variety of different children, you have estimates as far as a number of rate that an individual own. I'm sorry, I'm getting a migraine apparently, so it's not making maybe as much sense as it should. And then there's also the report talks about the housing wage as well. And that's an interesting piece in the report. And I think I'm going to let the report speak to itself at that point. This is horribly timed migraine. And so the next slide here, I don't think that needs a lot of explanation, but this is the mortgage security maps. And this is redlining. And then we also have preference that has become pretty commonplace regarding single family housing, and then also exclusionary zoning barriers. And I think that's all. Again, I have additional information, but since the migraine is really making this difficult as far as this, what I see, and apparently also what I'm telling you all right now. I'm so sorry.
Caitlin, if you need me to step in at any point, please let me know.
You maybe should, but I'll go to the next slide. I don't think this requires a lot of information for you all. I think this is pretty, I'm sorry, Chris, you should probably take over.
Yeah, so for the 830J legislation, one of the things that's necessary about it is that per the Connecticut statutes, it's the housing plan needs to be put into place 5 years following the adoption of it. It was effective as of July 2017, so it's got to go into place in less than a year from now, in July 20. Let me restart the video here. Did not think I'd be speaking now. It's got to go into effect as of July 2022. It must specify how the town intends to increase the number of affordable housing developments. Yeah, it kind of like helpful to outline like what is necessary for everything, and so ultimately what needs to be adopted is in the affordable housing. You need to make the affordable housing plan. The Regional Plan Association made a good guidebook on what should be included in the plan. A lot of the analysis that I will get into here in a minute covers a lot of the data that I went and collected was from this plan. It gives a good overview of what needs to be included, what should be focused on, what needs to be further delved into. It's a very, very good comprehensive piece that I highly recommend looking into if you are starting the plan. And it offers you a chance to get out in front of a lot of these issues. So 830G, it was an appeals process. So it went into court. It made things. It's a messy process. So this allowed these affordable housing plans allow the towns to be proactive about affordable housing rather than reactive and have to go into a messy legal battle. And there's a certain amount of communication and recognition of how people are impacted by housing regulations and that results in an actual communication of what the community's goals are. And there's also a distinguishment between not just like providing housing that's reasonable cost. It also then just determines how housing costs can be affordable for all people, for people of all incomes, which I will get to in a moment on a lot of these other issues in the analysis. And it really shows how housing is a very, very important piece of opportunity and building generational wealth, not just in Connecticut, but across the country in total. So that leads us into the regional housing assessment, which I have been trying to put together as fast as humanly possible. This involved gathering and analyzing a variety of demographic, housing, and economic data points. There were a lot of data points that I ended up gathering, and some I didn't even think I needed when I started that ended up being very important. It's important to note that this is this report presents a snapshot of the town's current conditions. There are some historical trend data points, but it's mostly just a current view of what's going on and what maybe a town should focus on when looking into their affordable housing plans. And the solutions will obviously vary between the towns. There are certain factors that are at play in one town that may not be at play in another town. I would also like to give a shout out to our former intern, Stephanie Camp, who was a big help on putting this report together. She is on the call with us tonight. And her work was very, very, very valuable. So kudos to you, Stephanie, for helping out with this. It was very, very needed. So I'll start off with the some of the demographic data points that I went through. The first that I found very, very interesting, we'll only cover a handful of these, but the first that I found interesting was the population of young adults between the ages of 20 and 34. A lot of the talk and the reports that we found were that Connecticut was losing young adult populations. They somehow, like, Connecticut wasn't retaining these people once they would get out of school. And what we found is that Connecticut is retaining more young adults than we think there are. So the overall state trend from 2000 to 2019, the regional young adult population grew at about a 0.4% rate, which is not much. But in the capital region alone, it grew from the percentage of population that is young adults grew from about 18% to over 20%, which is a pretty significant jump for the region. And there were a couple towns that were significant outliers, Wellington and Mansfield. Even when removing those, every town gained a significant amount of young adults during that time. The reason that I wanted to focus on young adults is that most young adults are some in school, they are maybe in jobs that don't pay a lot of money. So this is a group, myself included, I should add, that is significantly impacted by housing price, rental and purchasing prices. So it's not just, so a lot of these young adult populations that I put presented on the map here as well, they're mostly concentrated around UConn and Central Connecticut State, but they're also heavily concentrated in urban areas such in city areas such as Hartford, West Hartford, parts of Farmington, which is surprising, Manchester, East Windsor, Enfield. And so there's there appears to be a desire for a lot of young adults to live closer to urban centers. It's just an interesting data point overall. The other group that demographic group that I looked into that had significant impacts for regional planning was the population of elderly. This is ages 65 and over. And the percentage of the population has increased from about 14% to over 16%. That's about a 2% increase in the percentage of population. That's a pretty significant gain. And this is a very different impact for this group of people. So while young adults are very mobile and just starting out in their careers and usually pretty healthy, elderly populations tend to be a lot less mobile. They may have some health concerns that force them to go seek pretty consistent medical care. So when looking at this map, a lot of the concentrations of elderly populations, communities with high percentages of elderly populations are in rural areas. And that is pretty difficult. It's difficult to access medical care, especially when you can't drive. Living close to family is often an important solution for that. And some of the new laws that were passed, especially the ones around accessory dwelling units, middle housing, multifamily housing, could be of impact, could be of significant impact to helping these populations ultimately. The final demographic data that I took a look at was racial minority population, and so majority of the CROG region is it's about 3/4 of the population identify as white. There's still about a quarter of the population that identify as a non-white race. So about 13% Black, about 0.5% Native American, 6% Asian, small percentage Native Pacific Islander, and then about 9% other or two or more. One of the major things about this key piece is that a lot of the racial minority populations have significant overlaps with low income, poor health, high housing cost burden, which in a few maps I will get to. And a lot of these populations are concentrated around the major urban centers as well. And so with these next two economic data points, it kind of ties back to this slide. We'll start with the median household income populations. Again, in the areas that have the very light blue, that is the lowest average income level for that census tract. And that has a pretty high overlap with racial minority populations. And if we go into the next slide, which is high housing cost burden, there's also significant impact overlap with that. There's also significant overlap with young adult populations as well. So the point to make here is that a lot of with these overlapping factors of high housing cost burden, medium household income, and high racial minority populations, is that a lot of solutions that could be targeted towards, these lower income groups will have a significant impact on racial equity. So a couple final data points to look at. These were regarding to the housing stock. The first one is just a general look at what the total number of housing units in each tract are. The first one, the one on the left, just shows the number of units in a tract. And there's a lot of rural areas that it's like, wow, there's a lot of housing units on that. Until you look at the one piece on the right, which is the density, there is a large, decrease in just the density of the units. So while parts of Ellington, Tallinn, Willington, Granby, Berlin, they have, 2,500 housing units on that tract. Well, it's under about 750 units per square mile. So that's a pretty low density ultimately. And it doesn't get much higher until you reach about East Hartford, Manchester, West Hartford, Hartford itself, New Britain. That was a very interesting point to show that, the capital region is not as dense as we think it is in terms of housing. And the other thing that was of note was the amount of subsidized housing units per tract. There's about 25,000 subsidized units in the region, including Union, which is included in a lot of these maps because of just how census tracts are drawn. It's an interesting thing. So a lot of these units, you'll see the highest concentration of units are in the major urban centers, especially like Hartford, New Britain, East Hartford, Manchester, Bloomfield. But in some of these areas, they go unoccupied. So in some of the Hartford areas, it's around 85 to 90% or sometimes even under 85% occupied. So that shows to us that a lot of these units are not getting filled And there could be some factors at play where that could help to fill these units, whether that be to lower the income. It could be to lower the income thresholds for people to go and occupy these units. So overall, it was a very interesting and eye-opening analysis. There were many other maps that were done for the final report, which I am currently furiously working on to get out the door. Hopefully I'm able to do that next week or the week after. But the executive summary, I'm hoping to have it at least in the next couple of days ready to go. So that will at least be out the door, and I'm willing to present it to any of you if you would like to see what the kind of the overview of what the report has. In addition to this report, I assembled the Affordable Housing Toolkit. This is a very, very, very pared down version of it. Kind of gives just a very, it even gives a higher view than kind of the 30,000 foot regional view. I'd say it's more of 100,000 feet at this point. We provide a pair of dashboards, one on just demographic and economic data and the other one on housing. And so you can kind of just take a look at what a town has in terms of certain characteristics, in terms of demographics, economics, housing stock. There's also downloadable data if planners want to, or staff or members like you want to go and do any kind of town analysis pieces. We provide town level data and census tract level data. There's a lot of it. I had to put together an identification key just to keep track of all of what I did. And so that is available for download if you so desire as well. And some of the maps that I put together and that were featured tonight were included in this as well. And that is it for this presentation. Apologies to Caitlin for just having to.
Sorry, everyone.
It's okay.
It doesn't happen often, but
you had to tag me in, and I had to do what I had to do. So that is it. If you have any questions or comments on it all, please feel free to ask. And thanks a bunch.
I'm impressed with the 91.4, I assume 1,000 medium income. Is that average or the midpoint or what is that?
So that when I was putting together that analysis, that so median household income, that probably took the median income level of each of the 38. Since that's based off of the town level data, that probably took the median income number that was listed on the sheet, well, basically of the 38 towns. So that for the entire region might be a bit misleading, but for the towns themselves, the number that is provided is the accurate number. So that's just kind of a funky way that that's probably just the average of all of the numbers. So I don't know if that's going to necessarily be the right number, but it's probably reasonably accurate. Just kind of thinking about it.
Chris, Tom Armstrong, Avon. Is this information available on your website or can we get copies?
The toolkit or the report?
Well, the graph information you had was worthwhile looking at.
Yeah. So the report will be coming. We're still putting that together. So that's going to be done in the coming days or weeks. The toolkit, let me just put that in the chat right now. I'm just going to go to the website and just pull that web webpage so that if y'all want to browse that at your convenience. So the link is, the link is in the chat now. So if you got, if you all want to take a look at what that provides, that is done and ready to go.
One follow-up to that. Will you be doing some comparison of the Capital Region to Connecticut as a whole?
We do some comparisons in the report. There's not a lot, only because a lot of the, since the town level, since this is a lot of the, since the reports are being produced at the town level, at least when putting this together, it was probably, we thought it was best to not include a ton of that, only because it just comparing the region to the state didn't make a lot of sense in a lot of cases. There are some cases where there are comparisons made, but there's not a lot. Stan, I saw that you had your hand. I see that you have your hand up. Go ahead.
Yes, a couple things. I understand that the housing, affordable housing cost or the price of housing escalates and moves. It's a moving target. It's not a stable number. And I'm wondering how the explosion.
Me again.
I'm sorry. I'm just wondering how the explosion of the housing market is going to affect what we consider affordable housing.
Here's the definition of marketing: the action or business of promoting and selling products or.
So, that is going to be hard to know, because of just kind of. You know, factors beyond our control a lot of things that we just don't know at this point. So it could, but yeah, since a lot of this is so short term, by the time the data is available for us to probably analyze, there might be a completely different situation. So, yeah,
that's one of the issues I have, because Newington, they have an older section in the north end up here, excuse me, and, you know, that's considered affordable housing, but the price is going so high that people aren't going to be able to afford them.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
All right, the second thing I have is I've noticed that where we've had several housing developments put in, we seem to be getting farther away from mass transit. So I don't know. It seems like it's in conflict. We want people to get out of their vehicles and take mass transit and, public transportation. But yet we're building stuff so that they either have to walk more than a mile or else take an Uber or something to get to a bus stop or a rail stop. It makes no sense. I think what needs to be done is a comprehensive plan for the entire region. So if you have housing development, let's say in the northwest corner, and you don't have any mass transit there, whether it be bus, rail, whatever, that needs to be brought into play. Because otherwise, we have no way of getting these people from affordable housing to a job. And that has always bothered me. I mean, we can build up along the rail lines all we want and take away all the industrial property. But at some point in time, you know, that's going to have to flip, because towns and cities can't rely on residential properties to pay their taxes.
Oh, for sure. So one of the things that we ended up focusing on that I'll talk about here briefly one of the data points that I looked into was building permits and how many building permits were issued and how many units were built per building permit. And kind of looking at the overall aggregate from the span of 2015 to 2019. And one thing that is notable is that a lot of these new developments are being built in areas that don't have a ton of transit access. Let me see if I can pull up the map here quickly, just so that I can refresh my memory on where these units built. I want units per. Is this the one? No, I don't want this to open in Photoshop. why are you doing this to me? Okay, so yeah, so this is new. So the map that I have in front of me is new units per building permit. And what we wanted to look at was how many just kind of units were built per building permit. And in a lot of these areas that are having high levels of just general dense units, like the threshold for that was 3.25 or more units per building unit. There, it's mostly in suburbs that don't have immediate transit, that may not have immediate transit access. So it is, your point is very well taken that a lot of these pieces don't quite work together. And one of the solutions that I do mention in the report is that there needs to be especially a focus on just kind of, especially on transit-oriented development, especially with like multifamily and like middle housing, so that it can provide an option for people who don't want to use a car. There's not a lot of options that are available to people who don't want to use a car. So
right. And the other
your point
thing,
is taken.
The other thing I think too, Chris, is you should look at what the towns have approved. And mm-hmm. there may not be any building permits out here yet, but there's a huge complex going on, 333 Berlin Turnpike. Mm-hmm. 100 and some odd units up there. So, and again, this is not within a loop of a bus system. So you really need to look at that too to see what the towns have approved, mm-hmm. in my opinion.
That's a very good point. Thank you. Thank you for that. We'll try to consider the limited amount of time that we have. It might be something worth looking into in the future as well. So thanks a bunch.
Okay.
Jay Stoppelman in Manchester. I'm still a little bit concerned about median. Median means the middle number,
mm-hmm.
the same above and the same below, not the average. And this 91 really looks like an average.
Mm-hmm. That's I think just a product of just kind of how the dashboard operates in terms of like just what in terms of just average data point, in terms of just how the data point was calculated. I can probably go back in and if I were to find a combined median household income for the region, it would look different. But it would take some digging and some analyzing to find it. So
yeah, well then call it average in the document, not median.
Yeah.
Does anyone else have any questions for Chris?
No, that was great, Chris. Thank you. Very informative.
Not a problem.
Thank you very much. It was a great presentation.
Jennifer, I hate to interrupt, but I think that Mark has his hand raised.
Yep. Mark, go ahead.
Okay, go for it, Mark.
Okay, can you all hear me?
You've got to unmute yourself.
Yep.
Yep.
Chris, Mark, Francis, Newington. To meet you, Chris.
Yep.
So basically, my two questions are the following. The first question is in response to the, I believe as I read it, one of the slides, one of the frames said that the cost of living is going up. But the wages, if you will, for lack of a better way of putting it, that are paid to workers are going down. Am I correct? Is that kind of a right phraseology? Or does that make any sense in my?
Yeah, it's. I think it's more that the wages have remained flat when it's relative to the cost of living. It's basically a decrease, but yes.
Okay, so basically my question then is, I believe that there is a law here in Connecticut, legislation that was recently passed, that the minimum wage in the state of Connecticut is $15 an hour.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So now, having said that, at $15 an hour, I would probably expect that to be entry-level workers. But realistically speaking, that could be any age range. That could be anywhere from your legally able to work young person to anyone, any age range, $15 an hour minimum wage.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess my question, more specifically, having said that, is how can we get these people that are in these situations making $15 an hour, and then balance out the staggering cost to live, in Connecticut, for example, and where does affordable housing come in that situation? So that's my first question.
Yeah. So just some kind of back of the envelope calculations. A $15 an hour minimum wage worker is going to make about $31,000 a year pre-tax. That's not a lot of money at all. And so, just being able to live just a general comfortable life is very difficult with that, just on that income alone, especially with reasonably high housing costs. Just kind of speaking from experience, I used to live in Ohio, and that is a wage that you could definitely live on there, but not really here, because of even the cost of goods are much higher here and all that. So kind of how that would play into housing is finding methods, and this is probably not necessarily something that we as CROG can advocate for that, but we can't necessarily implement that. It would probably have to come from either the state level or the federal level policy to find ways to house people, and especially in ways that are safe and kind of health conscious and conscious of certain factors that also may be at play as well. So there's probably policies that can be implemented on that topic. I can do more research into finding them, but that would be definitely a Connecticut, just a state level or federal level implementation.
Thanks, Chris. And then my second question, I'll try to make it real brief, is that I believe there's also another piece of legislation that a person that's graduated from high school or has a GED graduate equivalency diploma can go to community college, I believe, for free in the state of Connecticut. And what I'm trying to get at with that point is, with that piece of legislation being passed, is how does CRCOG or CRCOG, what's the view on getting people that otherwise couldn't afford your UConn's, your private schools, your state schools, or your private schools, to go, for example, to a community college to get an associate's degree, and then see if that could be kind of a catalyst for these people that otherwise wouldn't have the opportunity to get a bachelor's or higher level education, get them started off with their associate's degree, and see if that could possibly start a cycle or a revolution and be a catalyzer to possibly serve as a remedy to kind of level off and offer some sort of a leverage to both getting more a higher wage based on education, and also I think that could also to a kind of a piggy or tail end on Stan Sobieski from Newington's point of possibly deviate the, not to point to him specifically, but just in general, possibly offer that as a remedy to the situation and alleviate the burden on an affordable housing and help people transition not only to a quality of life, but also a median or better, you know, better housing. So I'll leave it at that. And thank you very much.
So that's probably something that we would take a look into in our plan of conservation and development renewal when that comes up in 2024. So while I personally would support that, and I feel like CROG as an organization would definitely support that, we don't really, that would be something that we would look into as a policy for kind of regional, to put forth on the regional level for our POCD. So, yeah, that'll be something that comes down the line probably. So, Stanley, you've got your hand up again?
Yes. One quick, point of information. The state passed some type of, first-time home buyers plan. We can go in, buy a house, put nothing down. I get a little concerned when I see, and I check the paper periodically, I see some of these houses going way up to over 300,000. And I'm afraid that's going to lead to a balloon pop, so to speak, with a lot of foreclosures. People may be getting in over their heads. Just to let you know. Thank you.
Yeah, that's definitely something that probably be keeping an eye on. So.
Chris, Tom Armstrong, Avon.
Yep.
I don't know whether I recall speaking with you before, but there was some discussion that CROG was considering doing a task force on housing issues. If so, where does that stand?
I don't necessarily, that might have been discussed before I was brought on in January. So if it was discussed prior to me being brought on, I have no knowledge of it, and I do not have any knowledge of it since I've been brought on. So I think it's just been more of I think that this plan, that this assessment report that I've been putting together is more the thing that we've been focusing on. And I have heard nothing further on, nothing at all on a task force. So,
does anyone else have any other questions for Chris? All right. Thanks again, Chris.
Well, you're not getting rid of me just yet. Because I got more things to talk about.
Do we have the agenda that we can put up just so I can follow along?
Let me go back to the first slide. I got to go all the way back.
Sorry.
No worries.
All right, so we're going to move on to item number four, report on zoning and subdivision referrals.
All right, zoning referrals. I keep getting inundated with zoning referrals. It is very much an unending process. So let me just bring up what I sent it out in an email yesterday afternoon that you all should have received. Let me just bring it up here now so that I can remember what we're looking at. So a lot of these are kind of are basically your standard no comment. The ones that I want to particularly focus on that I gave more than standard no comment. This one from Bolton, that they are was specifically pertaining to the accessory dwelling units permitted. And that is related to one of the laws that was passed back in June or July, and commending them on adding the addition of accessory apartments, furthering a greater diversity of housing types and costs. The other one that is relevant is one from Cheshire. And even though that's outside the region, I'll support it as well. Efforts around animal agriculture, keeping the poultry, keeping of roosters and turkeys. And that was another good thing as well. The rest is basically your standard no comment. A lot of cannabis establishment moratoriums, which I will have more. I will talk more about cannabis and related zoning things in the other business. But for now, that is all I have.
Does anyone have any questions or comments on the referrals that were presented? If not, would someone like to make a motion to approve? Stanley, I think you're muted.
Yes, Stanley Kobieski, Newington, make a motion to approve.
Do I hear a second?
Second, Bazano, Hartford.
Any further comments or discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Any abstention? Motion carries.
Wonderful.
Okay. Before we get into what's new in my town, I know we have a new member and a couple of attendees that aren't always with us, so you don't know me. So I want to introduce myself. I'm Jennifer Bartis Early, and I am the chairperson for Plainville and our chairperson here at CROG. So I just want to introduce myself and welcome Meg Harvey from Windsor and Martha Kelly, who's a guest with us here. And thanks, Stephanie Camp, for attending. So I guess I'll start with what's new in my town. So for Plainville, we are looking at our regulations for dispensaries for marijuana and changing them to include the recreational component ahead of the regulations that the state's going to be putting out. Other than that, we just have a large project that's in close proximity to Town Hall that they're still kind of going back and forth and looking to make sure that it's going to be a viable project where the old White Oak building was. Other than that, we are just moving along with an agenda filled with a lot of upcoming plans. Nothing that's a huge one yet, potentially one that will be a large development with Farmington for 55 and older housing. But other than that, nothing current, all pending.
Stanley Sobieski from Newington. We approved units in Berlin Turnpike, 333 Berlin Turnpike, and we just approved another unit at 690 Cedar Street for, 670 Cedar Street for middle-income housing.
Oh, in Talland, this is Bruce Mayer from Talland. On Monday, we're having a public hearing on a major series of zoning regulation changes to all of our commercial zones. The goal to kind of streamline processes to make more uses by right instead of special permit. And, I think overall trying to be more open to commercial development. And so, there really are pretty sweeping changes. And so I'll be interested to see the response of our residents on Monday night.
This is Brendan Malone, Town of Suffield. We formed a subcommittee on affordable housing. which includes the Planning and Zoning Commission, the Board of Selectmen, our Suffield Community Aid, our Housing Authority, and Economic Development Department. So there's a lot of people who have come together to try to tackle the issue, and so we're moving ahead with an affordable housing plan. In terms of recreational cannabis, we're surrounded by towns. Many of people who are here tonight who have already put in place moratoriums. We're trying to pick a direction. We were trying to come up with regulations without having to enact a moratorium. But there's a lot of differing opinions, and we're actually next week we're going to be having a joint meeting on cannabis with the Board of Selectmen. So we'll see where it goes. I don't know if we're going to go the moratorium route or whether we're going to try to draft some very fast regulations, but you know, time will tell. That's all I have. Thank you.
Hi, Gary Bazzano, City of Hartford. We approved about a month or so ago a new housing project. One of the old ones, one of the final ones that have been around for a long time, is being taken down, and it's going from about 60 units to, I think, around 200 units. The old Charter Oak area down Dutch Point, closer to like Willis Street, if you know any of that area, not far from the hospital, just east of Hartford Hospital. We too are working on cannabis. We had a subcommittee set up that did a whole beautiful matrix of all the different uses that are going to be allowed over time. I believe, I want to say there's 9 different uses they're going to be able to have, along with, you know, retail and dispensary or manufacturing or micro cultivating, I think it's called. So we've been working on that. I'm interested to see what Chris has to say about all that. So I'll hold my conversation on cannabis till we start talking about it. We got a big project in the works right now where Hartford Hospital, Hartford Healthcare is looking to add some emergency transformers and things to their property. Thank you.
Tom Armstrong, Avon. At the end of this, unless Krog says I can't do it, I'll give you my telephone number because I have a question for any member that can offer some insight into one of the areas. First is somewhat of a heads up. It's Public Act 21-34. This is the extension of 5 years to site plans that are there. We've run into a little difficulty of late in that there's a subdivision that's been built out, but roads, lighting, and other things are not complete on it. But according to verbal comments from council, we cannot call the bond because of the extension under that statute. If on that anybody has any comments or their council is of different view, we can take precautions in the future, but these are things that were approved in the past. One of the things I'm looking for any information on, and this gets back to 8-30J, is experience with regard to standing housing committees. And Brandon, I think you're from Suffield. I'll probably try and give you a call. But I'm looking, I've heard good stories. I've heard bad stories. I just want to get the experience. Now, by standing housing committee, I'm not referring to a housing authority where there is existing town units that need to be managed. So I'd be interested in any input on that. And officially right now, we've built out our town center, as a lot of people know, or are building it out, but Whole Foods is opened. It opened officially on September 1st, I believe, maybe a little bit before that. So telephone number, if I can give it out, on anything that you might have on any of the above that I discussed is 860-977-5247. Thanks.
Meg Harvey, Windsor. We are also in Windsor talking about recreational cannabis, and rather than move immediately to a moratorium, we're planning to have a sort of a public listening session, I guess, in the fall to hear input, because we do have a diversity of opinions about which direction we should go with recreational cannabis. We also, a number of years ago, we changed our zoning regs to allow brew pubs. And in July, we approved our first one on Dayhill, out on Dayhill Road. And also in July, approved another pretty large distribution warehouse on Kennedy Road at Hayden Station. And we heard a lot of public comment against the number of distribution warehouses, large ones that we have in town now, and the truck traffic. So we're thinking about what we might do with our warehouse and industrial zone, because they can, by right, build and operate on that zoned land. That's it for me.
Hey, Bart Pasikonis, South Windsor. We've also been moving forward with a moratorium on the sale of recreational cannabis. We're also looking at having a moratorium on multifamily residential. We're also working on our affordable housing plan, and we've recently approved a revised general plan at Evergreen Walk, which relocates some roadways. It moved some stores, and it added a Whole Foods market right behind, depending on which direction you're going, the new Costco that's under construction.
I'm sorry, did you say you were doing a moratorium on multifamily housing?
We're moving that forward to public hearing, and we'll be sending that to CROG probably in the next couple weeks.
And the reason behind that?
We're a very fast-growing community. I believe we're the fastest-growing school system in Connecticut. We have a lot of issues that we'd like to change with the regulations, and we'd like to put more affordable housing mandated into the regulations. So we're getting a lot of applications, and we've done like 4 distribution centers, and I guess there's another one in the pipeline. We're just not enough time to do everything we got to do. So we'll be having it go out to public hearing once we get all our notices in.
It's Jay Stoppelman, Manchester. The latest thing that we did was approve a Spencer Street hotel converting to apartments with at market rate, but hopefully a little more affordable than some of our newer multifamily housing. We've otherwise had a good summer. Been a fairly quiet summer. Thank you.
Does anyone else have anything to add for what's new in their town? If not, we can move on to the next agenda item. Items under other business.
So one thing that I wanted to discuss with the group here is that in a, as a most of you know, I sent out a poll regarding the topics that you all wanted to hear about at the upcoming meeting. Since I kind of took over on short notice, you kind of had to scramble to put something together on this topic. But a lot of you had said that you wanted to hear about cannabis best practices in regards to zoning and community engagement. That is going to be on the table for the next meeting in November. The only reason we didn't do it is because we didn't have enough time. But we think that we can put together a pretty kind of a wide range of views, trying to get a range of views and maybe some folks from towns up in Western Massachusetts, where it's been legal since 2016, I believe, and 2017-ish. We're looking into that. And if you all have any questions, any things you would like to hear about in regards to that topic, any voices you would want to hear from, we are open to hearing what you have, what your thoughts are.
Does anyone have any other topic ideas? Or you can also email Chris. That way you can let him know what your thoughts are and help with preparing the presentation for the next meeting. Gary?
No, I just wanted to talk about cannabis. So if you want to hold off for a minute on that and see if anybody has any thoughts, that's fine.
Either way.
What's that? So,
go ahead, Gary.
Thank you. So, you know, reading through all these regs and everything the state, you know, in their infinite wisdom comes up with quite often on these things, they use the word equity a lot, equitable, right? And one of my concerns, especially in Hartford, is as you read a lot of these articles in the paper, they talk about some of these major players in this marijuana growing business, right? So I asked basically the legislature, you know, what are the regs regarding that? You know, you want equitable, you know, they set up a whole equitable commission, I think, if I'm not mistaken now. One of my concerns is that in a city or a town, there's no guarantee that the person that opens up the facility will be from that city or town. Okay. And I said, well, that's, you know, they said, well, it has to go before Department of Consumer Protection. And I said, and somebody could actually bid on a license and really never use it. Okay. So they could buy that. They can bid on the license. They can get it. And in theory, they can sell it. And they said, well, they can't sell it without Department of Consumer Protection's authority or approval. And my thought is they still can sell it. It's a commodity that they're getting their hands on, a license that they're getting their hands on that is transferable. Okay. It has to be approved, but it is transferable. So, you know, in Hartford, obviously, we're gonna most likely pass something on this eventually. It's just a matter of what. But my concern is that the right people, in the equitable world we're in, the right people might not be the ones that get these licenses, and they happen to go to out-of-staters and everybody else. So the whole equitable part of it gets thrown out, and only the big fish are the ones that gobble up these licenses. So it's a concern I have, and maybe Craig can relay that to the state. But I think that what we have written is not very specific as to what we really want to do in an equitable situation. And just anybody's thoughts on that.
We're starting to put together some best model regulations, and that's something that we can definitely look into in regards to that. And, hopefully present something on equity and in this top in cannabis once the topic comes around in February.
Right. I mean, it seems to be the word cannabis. The words cannabis and equity seem to go together with this project, so I'm concerned it's really not going to be equitable.
Yeah. We'll make sure we take a look at that.
All right, great. Thank you.
No problem.
Does anyone else have any comments or questions for Chris?
Well,
If not, the next item on the agenda?
There is no more items on the agenda.
No more. So then if we have no more items on the agenda, would someone like to make a motion to adjourn?
Stanley Sobieski from Newington, motion to adjourn.
Second, Bazzano Harford.
Any further comments or discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? Oh, I got one chat over here. Oh, I got the aye over there from Tom in the chat box. And motion carries. So when is our next meeting? The date? Do we know?
It is, I believe, in November. Let me make sure of the date.
It is on November 18th.
November 18th. I was going to say November 7th.
I live and die by this.
And it looks like we're staying virtual, correct?
Yep.
Okay. So then we will see everyone on November 18th. Everybody stay safe and healthy.
Take care. Yep. Bye-bye, everyone.
Cheers, Jen.
Good night. Thank you, everyone.